Okay, so Simplest Bitch to Waiver, that's our topic. Okay, great. And for those who haven't been to one, probably will this year. You know, that's what's going on, and definitely in Yerushalayim and throughout Eretz Yisrael. Simplest Bitch to Waiver, Hashoeva, is a very, very exciting event, right? The way the Gemara describes it, if you have a handout. If you don't have a handout, by the way, here's one. Pass them around. You're going to be jumping off it most of the time, but some things I want you to see. The Mishnah in Sukkah says, Misha lo ra simcha spesha Hashoeva, lo ra simcha miyamav. Right? The Gemara really goes crazy with this idea of the Simchas Beis Hashoeva. It was supposed to be the biggest, most unbelievable party ever. Party of the century. Every year. And you really haven't experienced happiness. Who's experienced happiness in this room? A little hesitation there, I got nervous. But all right, we're going to talk a lot about what it means to experience happiness. It's really the topic. Because Chazal tell us that the epitome of happiness is the Simplest Beis Hashoeva. Now, what goes on in the Simplest Beis Hashoeva? The Chazal go crazy with that also. It's like the most amazing experience. They have all these Rabbanim doing amazing feats. You know, one guy will stand like this, bend all the way down from his ankles, and bring himself up. All sorts of amazing acrobatics, and great food, and drink, and everything's just amazing. Supposed to be the most joyous moments. So the question I always had, and I have, is what exactly is the simcha? What are we having this incredible party for? What's generating all this happiness and joy? That's the question. Now, in fact, somebody this morning said to me, don't you think it's going to be a little difficult to talk about the simple space shoeva before Yom Kippur, right? Because it seems like out of place. Yom Kippur is a very serious time, as I'm sure you experienced this morning with Rav Gavriel. Very serious speech. But, you know, he could take anything and put humor into it, and make him talent that way. Which is a good thing to have, by the way. I recommend that if you want to go through life healthy, be as happy as you can. So, that's what we're going to talk about today, is the source of the happiness of the Simplest Beis Hashoeva. Maybe that'll give us some tips on how to achieve happiness in our lives. That's really what I'm after. You know, that's part of the cardiologist in me. It's very good for the heart, having happy people. So, I told the person who thought that it was going to be difficult to go right before Yom Kippur, which is such a serious time, and talk about happiness and joy, I said, no, you're making a big mistake. It's Adarabah. The truth of the matter is, it's critical to discuss the Simplest Beis Hashoeva right before Yom Kippur. And hopefully you'll understand what I mean by that. So what exactly, who could tell me, anyone in the room, what is the source of joy and happiness of the Simplest Beis Hashoeva? Anyone know anything about it?
Like drinking Hashem from water.
Yeah, it's going to relate to that somehow. What was it? It was really, if you look at the second Malcolm, you don't have to, because we're going to really just use this as prompting. The Gemara and Rashi, the conventional understanding of Simplest Beis Hashoeva, was there was something called the Nisuch HaMayim. That was part of the ceremony in the Beis HaMikdash. All year long they did wine libations. When they brought korbanos, so they poured wine on the Mizbeach. But on Sukkot, they poured water. Why? So, exactly, what's your name?
Dalbatha.
Oh, you're right, Andrew's right. Yeah. So, they did water. Why? Because of what Noah said, which is they were very happy about having water. They were giving great thanks to having water, and that was a source of tremendous joy and happiness. Now, how many people can relate to that in this room? Me neither. None of us can relate to it. Why? Because the difference is we take water for granted. Like, what's the big deal? You turn on the faucet, you have water. We don't really feel it. But if you can imagine, back in the day when water was a commodity, and if you didn't have water, you know, like 10% of the population died, you know, that meant something. So there was tremendous joy, right? You don't relate to this, in that knowledge and the great gratitude in knowing that Hashem was giving water. And that's what the Nisuch HaMayim was. But that's not going to do it for us. And if I want you, what I really want you guys to have, when you go to a simple space of Shoeva, I want you to be going crazy, really happy, dancing like crazy, really into it. In order to do that, you need two things. One, a good drink. But that's only, you know, Yishbor Saklipa, that's only like a side thing. And you got to have some understanding and meaning out of the event, right? That's my part. I won't supply the drinks. That's my neighbor, the anesthesiologist. If you come over, he always, I once took my shiur there on Purim, right? So by me, you know, I'll get the word out early. Like, my wife doesn't let the guys drink in my house. So I said, all right, I'm not going to fight with my wife. So I went over to my neighbor, who loves to have guys come over, right? And he's working in the hospital all day. He doesn't get to interact with young, up-and-coming guys. So I always bring him over, and he takes care of that. But he's not here. So what we're going to focus on instead is meaning, getting meaning out of it. What's the meaning? So Rashi, which is conventional, this idea of Nisuch HaMayim, I always have a tough time getting excited about it because I too, take water for granted. So then there's the Rambam. The one thing that's beautiful about the Rambam, and as you learn more, you're going to appreciate this, he is an independent thinker. It's one of the things I love about the Rambam. Aside from being brilliant beyond imagination, incredibly insightful, incredibly, you know, above everyone else, really, to some degree, he's just naturally independent. He doesn't follow the crowd. So when it comes to the simple spesheva, he gives a completely different explanation. So that's on the bottom over here. He says the following: Af al pi shekol ha-moedos mitzvah l'smoch b'hen, v'chag ha-sukos ha'isa sham b'migdash simcha yisera. So the first thing he tells me is, it's always a mitzvah on every yantiv to be b'simcha, but on Sukkot, the simple space of Shoeva, which is what he's referring to, simcha yisera. What does simcha yisera mean? Don't worry about it. It means an incredible extra joy. It's the joy of joys, right? And then he says, what's the basis? Shenemar b'samachtem lifnei Hashem elokechem shivas yamim. There it is. All right, so according to the Rambam, somebody tell me, what's the source of the simcha? Anyone got it? B'samachtem lifnei Hashem elokechem shivas yamim. What's he talking about? Anyone have a clue? You shouldn't, because it doesn't really make any sense. He's just quoting the beginning of the end of a pasuk. Anyone know this? Anyone in Balkore? Anybody? It's the end of the pasuk. Right? Keep that in mind. The beginning is what he's getting at. We'll see in a second. But then he throws in a lot more that before I answer what exactly he saw as the source of the simcha, which to me is it, something I could really relate to, he throws in a few little extras. In the next description in the rest of Yud Beis and Yud Gimel, he describes all that great crazy stuff going on. It was a sound and light show and amazing fun and dancing and craziness. And then he gets to Yud Daled and he says, by the way, mitzvah laharbos b'simcha zu, it is a mitzvah to really go to town with this simcha. And v'lo ayu osino so amei aretz, but the only ones who could really get out there and highlight this simcha were the gedolei chachmei Yisrael, the roshei yeshivos, the chassidim, the zakenim, the anshei ma'aseh, the best, the cream of the crop. For some reason, and this begins to sound a little elitist, I didn't like this so much, right? What's the Rambam getting at? It's got to be the guy is leading the dancing, and the guy is leading all the fun are these are the rabbis and the chashuva, important, well dignified people. What about the rest of us? So he says at the end, "Aval kol ha'am hanashim ve'anashim kulan bayin liros lishmo." He says we don't stay home; we must be there, and we must be there, and we got to watch it and absorb it. There's something really important about watching all these very established people go nuts and go crazy, and you know, get a little drunk, but not ugly drunk, disinhibited drunk, so that you know their real selves come out. That's the key, he says. And then one more thing, he says, by the way, Asimcha she yismach adam basiyas mitzvah ubahava sakel shetiva ben avoda gedolahi. Then he throws in this last thing that we really need to understand. He says, to have simcha at the simple space shoeva is not easy. It's an avodah gedolah. It is a hard, arduous thing to accomplish. You've got to really work at it. Okay, so we got three questions on the Rambam. What exactly is the source of the simcha? I still don't get it. B'samachtem lifnei Hashem Elokechem shivas yamim. That just repeats that we're supposed to be happy. What's making me happy? Why am I so happy? What's this supposed to express, this craziness? Number two, it should be the finest, most accomplished people that really set the tone. They set an example that everyone else is going to watch and experience something that's going to make them have that same happiness. And achieving the happiness, he finally tells me, is an avoda gedola. So why the has to be that way? You know, who's better at getting it drunk? The rabbanim or the guys? Seriously. Right? Why should it be them doing it? And number two, why is it an avoda gedola? So let's answer those three questions. The answer to the first question is, what's the source of the simcha? So if I told you, the samachtu lefnei Hashem Elokeichem, shivat yamim, is the end of the puzzle, what's the beginning of the puzzle? Anybody?
Papagai.
Whenever I get desperate, I start offering papagai. It's been happening a lot this year. Ulekachtem lachem leyom arishon, pri etz hadar, kapos tmarim. Sound familiar? What's the meaning of that pasuk? You will take on the first day the arba minim, and then the samachtem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem. So there is a famous sefer, if you look on the second page, I recommend this for everyone in Chana Bet, for sure, and ultimately everyone in Chana Aleph. It's called Emek Bracha. When you're really ready to read Hebrew, and you want the best chidushim out there, this person, the author of the Emek Bracha, who is one of these like unbelievable people who just remains anonymous, he doesn't want anyone to know who he is, he just wants to do great things, he's an amazing person. Every piece in this sefer, and he writes on every single holiday, is unbelievable. To me, it's one of my favorite svarim. So I knew he would have something to say about this. What's with the Rambam? What's he getting at? So he tells me what the Rambam's getting at is the beginning of the pasuk, that the key to the happiness, listen to this, is having your arba minim. That will make you incredibly happy. So who can relate to that? What does that mean? Tell you, it's an amazing, unbelievable insight. Anyone know what it means? Anyone guess? All right. Stop shouting, everybody. So there is a sefer called Sefer Achinuch. Anyone familiar with that sefer? Now, what's special about that sefer is that sefer always gives reasons and explanations for mitzvahs. That's another one I really highly recommend for somebody who wants to start to understand their religion, which you really should, right? If you want to really be a Jew, it's very important to understand. So the Sefer Chinuch goes through everything, including this. And he has a comment to make. He tells me, why are the Arba Minim such a source of happiness and joy? Because, you know, I really, you know, I take Estrogim on nice, love him on nice, but to make me so happy and excited, hard to believe. So the Chinuch says, well, here's the reason. What's he saying? Who knows Hebrew? What's he saying? Why is taking the Dalmin such a joyful experience? Somebody? What's he saying? Because what's going on at this time of the year? What are we doing? Harvesting, gathering in the produce. So since it's such a joyful time gathering in the produce, that's what we're thinking about when we take our Dalmin. We're thinking, wow, oh, this is a fantastic time of the year. We're getting all the produce in. Now, who can relate to that? Mm-hmm. Nobody, right? Not me either. Although I got to tell you, I remember when I was in Chaldin many years ago, there was this amazing group of guys. For a while, I got very turned on. So I started going to Vasikin, remember this? And who made up most of the Vasikin minyan, you know, really early in the morning? It didn't matter. You know, post football, whatever the day was, they were always there. I was always there. The farmers, all of these farmers, used to come in like their work clothes, getting up at like 5 in the morning, and they just looked. I was like, you know, dying on the chair and barely conscious, barely able to think or speak. And these guys were up and at it and feeling great. They were so motivated to get out to their farms before the sun came out because they had to do it when it wasn't yet really hot. And they were down in Basikin, and I just watched them. I go, they're like super people. Like, what are they? They probably could really get into this reason, right? Because what do? They work their heads off all year, and they work to produce crops. And then, you know, after doing all the steps, Choresh, Zoreya, Kotzer, Me'ame, all these different steps, right? What happens at the end? They harvest and they bring it in. They probably feel very, very excited and happy, and the Arba Minim, the way the Chinuch describes it, does it for them, right? There is a famous Gemara in Brachos. Who's learning Brachos? Anyone up to Daf Ches yet? So when you get up to Daf Ches, you're going to see it says, Yigia Kapecha V'sochal ashrecha b'tov lach, which means, it's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, if you work hard and then accomplish, you're going to be very happy. So that's exactly what these guys could do. The farmers from Shalavim could be very happy, and all the farmers in the country could be very happy about taking their dal minim. Is that going to do it for us? Anyone here a farmer? No. So probably not. So I said to myself, as I'm looking for the source of this joy, is that really what the Rambam means? Is that it? So if you turn down, now I really want you to see the handout. Take a look. Everybody go to page 3. Here I am. I'm basically now searching, what is the key to happiness? What will make me happy? And I'm hoping it'll coincide, right? The expert opinion on what happiness is should coincide nicely with maybe chatting around. So I turn to Dr. David Pelkovitz. Has anyone heard of this individual? Oh, you will. Believe me. Anyone who lives their life and is concerned with anything real and serious and important is going to know about Dr. David Pelkovitz. He's a psychologist, but a brilliant one. Amazing, amazing psychologist. He's also a fantastic speaker. Very, very fun. He's as funny as Rav Gabriel any day, right? And incredibly well thought out. He doesn't say anything that he can't back up with a study and data. So he is the perfect guy to go to. Dr. Pelkovitz, what makes people happy? That's what I wanted to know. So he gave an amazing talk on this topic. It was called Happiness, right? And what did he say? So he starts it off very cleverly. He says, studies worldwide with thousands of subjects found that the three F's are the source of happiness. And then he said, which he expected no one really to be familiar with the article. Which of these are the three F's? And then he gives you a whole choice of all these F's, right? And then he goes blank. The blank, blank, and blank of happy people. And there's the name of the real article. So, you know, nowadays you just take out your iPhone and you can easily Google and find out what it is, right? But he expected the audience not to do that. He instead wanted people to try to guess what is it that makes people happy. So, who wants to be honest and volunteer to tell us what makes people happy?
Faith.
Oh, man. Honestly?
No.
who wants to be honest? If you meant it honestly, I'd take it. What do you think? Food? That's an honest answer.
Family
for sure. That one I like.
Friends
for sure. Those are good ones. By the way, in the real article, friends and family are in there. Food, sorry.
That's
you. Sure. It's very subjective, right?
Yes.
It really is. I mean, what is happiness? Is there really an absolute formula for happiness, or does it depend each person's different? What? Yeah. Hang on. Well, I wanted him to be honest, though, what he really thinks. He admitted that he doesn't really think it.
No, I was answering the question.
Oh, what you thought he would write?
Yeah, I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder what you think makes you happy. I'm after that. Because he spent the first half, turn the page, the first half of the lecture, he wanted to show the misconceptions that most people have. Now, we could say anything we want about food and any subjective thing we think, right? But what Pelkovitz does that makes him so on fire all the time is that he won't talk anecdotally. Everyone knows the difference between speaking anecdotally and speaking from real data. The difference is that there are people that study these things. So they would take, for example, 1,000 people and give them very carefully designed questionnaires to determine how well are we, right, this is the study that's on this page, at predicting what will make us happy, right? How good are we at it? So they say, the conclusion was we're terrible at it. We're terrible at predicting what's going to really make us happy, and we're terrible at predicting what's going to really make us devastated. That was the outcome of this very carefully designed study. It said, miswanting. Errors we make in choosing what will give us pleasure. On average, bad events prove less intense, right? Not as bad as we thought, and more transient. I mean, we got over it sooner, right, than research participants predicted about themselves. Good events, like eating, prove less intense and briefer as well. So people, what they thought, right, and this is trained psychologists doing this very carefully, determining who's happy, who's not happy, how long you are now. People were terrible at doing this, right? Almost all actions, and then in their discussion, they said this. The typical things we might have thought that made us happy, the decision to buy jewelry, have kids, buy the big house, work exhaustively for a fatter paycheck, making more money, no one said that. Isn't making more money going to make us happy? Right? Are based on our predictions of the emotional consequences of these events. We overestimate the intensity and the duration of our reactions, the effect to future events. In other words, we might believe that a new Lexus will make life perfect, but it almost certainly will be less exciting at the end of the day. Has anyone experienced this? I've experienced it at every point of my life. I could really relate to this. Elementary school, I remember the thing I wanted, I really thought this would bring me tremendous happiness and joy. I wanted a stereo. You guys know what a stereo is? Do they have that anymore?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Back in my day, they had stereos and records and tape, whatever those things are. And I thought, well, if I get a stereo and I get to listen to the music I like, I'm going to be very, very happy. Now, of course I like it. I liked it. But I remember thinking, all right, you know, it was so anticipated by me. You know, my parents finally got it for me. And I really wanted it, but it was, you know, it was good. But it was nothing like what I thought it would be. And then when I was in high school, I remember the thing I wanted more than anything was, you know, I was really into basketball. I wanted to win the championship. So, Flatbush, anyone from Flatbush?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, there was a time when Flatbush dominated the league.
Back in the day.
Yeah. So, back then, right, I thought if we win the championship, right, that's going to make me incredibly happy. So, we were undefeated and won the championship, and I'll never forget it. And it was nice. But the feeling I had was very disappointing at the end. We were all, and I remember all the guys on the team, right, looking at each other. We're supposed to be like really happy and, you know, break out the champagne and stop pouring it on each other's heads and all that kind of stuff. And there was something though disappointing about the degree of elation that we felt. It just didn't go there. And then finally, the other experience I had like a little later when I was my first year in college. So I was I remember that I wanted this job. There was this amazing job in a camp to be the waiter counselor. What was the waiter counselor's job? Well, it had three qualities to it. He got the most tips, right? Because there were like 50 waiters. You really, you know, were in charge of like half of them, so to speak. And you got tips from all of them. And they were all about 2 years younger than you. So they all, like, there was peer pressure for them to give you the tips. So you got the most money. Number two, you had nothing to do. Because what does the waiter counselor do? You really had no responsibility, so you got to play ball all day. And number three, you had full run of the kitchen. So you got to eat good food, well, the best thing you can get out of the kitchen in a camp, anytime you want. Wasn't that going to make me happy? And I remember I was so excited I got that job. But after experiencing it, it was definitely fun. It was nice, right? But it wasn't to the degree I thought it would bring me joy. In fact, I felt so guilty after that year. It brought guilt on me. I don't know, it was like too much. I ended up going to Hask for the next three summers after that. I needed it to purify me. Something about my anticipation of such great simcha, and then the feeling wasn't exactly what I was anticipating, had a tremendous effect on me. So that's what does not, according to Dr. Peltwitz, bring happiness. Not what we necessarily think. So what does it? So he very cleverly started off with the following question. What brings happiness? I want to see anyone get this right. Papa guys, if you get this right. This is the start of the fact, and don't look it up on your phone. What week in U.S. history had the least number of suicides? One week in the history of the United States had the least number of suicides. Now, I guessed, and I got in the top five, but I didn't get number one. I still think mine right, they just don't have the data. But what would you guess?
After 9/11.
That's what I guessed. I said after 9/11. Right? Of what? That was in the top five, but not number one. Not bad. Anyone know number one? Last chance?
Pearl Harbor that week?
No, I mean, that's similar. You mean when it was attacked? You're closer.
Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Not a bad guess. JFK assassination. Now, he throws this out to the audience. He said, the week after JFK was assassinated, everyone knows JFK, John F. Kennedy, President. Ancient history to you guys. I was born not too long after. So I don't remember it, but it was a big event in America. Why should that be the week of the lowest suicide rates in the United States? That's how he starts off his talk. So he's got everybody thinking, and he got me thinking, and I'm saying, wait a second. That's pshat. in the Rambam. I think I know what he's getting at. It's Pshat in the Rambam. Go back, if you were looking at all before, to that Sefer Achinuch. Because the Sefer Achinuch said something else in the second half. Right? It's on page 2. Aside from the agricultural reason for the Dalet Minim, he said the Dalet Minim means something else. This is the most famous Chinuch there is. He says it means each one of the Dalet Minim is representative of a part of the human body. Anyone ever hear this? Right? I'm sure you've heard it in elementary school, high school, right? The Esrog is what? The heart. Right? And the Lulav?
Sign.
And Hadassim? Eyes. And the Rabos? The lips. And he says, and all of those are coming together, and that's the source of the Simcha. So what does he mean by that? Why is that a source of Simcha? So this, I really thought about very hard, and it occurred to me something that's very, very significant. How much are you guys going to pay for your Dalet Minim? How much would you pay for an Esrog, a Lulav, a Dasim, and a Rabos? How much do you think you're going to pay? Anyone know the prices out there? Right? Watch out for Rabbi Ifer, he's got very expensive stuff. But don't tell me that. 5 minutes after this is over, Rabbi Ifer's going to come running in. Hey, the guys told me that you would. Yeah. All the prices about the same. What do you think the prices are? Well, you have no idea, right? You'll see. Should be, you know, this is a weird year because it's Shviz. You can't be really bartering with the prices, right? And you can't be looking for the best one. But typically, you know, those four plants will pull in anywhere from, let's say, 100 shekel to 250, sometimes 300, right? Now, what about the day after Sukkot? How much would you pay for them then?
20.
You know, you'll pay someone to take them away, right? You're not really getting me so anxious. What's the difference? What gave them value? What gives the lulav, the esrog, the hadassim, the rabbis value? Yes, the chag, the kedusha, the mitzvah. You took something that's really not worth much, but it was given value because Hashem gave a mitzvah with it, and it market value goes up tremendously. It has, at this moment, during the Zman HaMitzvah, incredible value. Now take the human body. Hapagadis. Who can tell me the monetary value of the chemical components of the human body? Anyone know? Now, there's been a lot of inflation, because I remember this was like a trivia question when I was like in Flatbush. Right? I remember there was a guy, his name was Mr. Zerger. Did you hear that name? He invented silly putty. That was one of his claims to fame.
Oh, yeah.
But what a dummy. He sold it for like $100 to the toy maker who made billions. And poor guy's teaching science. Probably should do. But whatever. He wasn't a sweet guy. Very nice guy. So he told us the chemical components of the human body. Anyone know what's the body mostly made of?
Water.
Water. Good. That's good. What else? A little carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, right? All those things. So how much is it worth? So back in his Zerda's day, it was like $15. Today, somebody, Papa Guys?
$23.
You know, it's funny. I was just entertaining one of my kids with YouTube videos, right? So one of them was like the dumbest game show. I'm not paying the person. It was a list of the 10 dumbest game show moments. So one of them was a guy in the Price is Right. That there was like a hammock that was worth about $10 and $7,000, and they won't make a cover. But so that's a hint. Give me a better number. What do you think it is? Close. 160. Let's stop. No Papa Guy has my wife. We'll be happy. All right. I'll give one more chance. Yeah. Right. $160 is what our body is worth. How much are we worth? Well, it depends. You know, let's say we start upping the material value by becoming somebody who could be a slave or something. Then, you know, put a body together and be able to do productive work, that value just went up. It's not going to be $165. You want to buy, you know how much good slaves are going for these days? You know, it's unfortunately not a joke that's really going on, right? ISIS is doing that. Like, they're selling slaves. You know, the right girl, I guess, what was he talking about? Yochanan, somebody with good books, like Yochanan, whatever, he's going to get a good price. 5 minutes? Uh-oh. So that's one thing. What about if you take this human body and you imbibe it with Kedusha and you make it a special holy being It becomes what?
Priceless.
Priceless. That is the source of the symbol. That's what you're supposed to be thinking about. That's what the Rambam's getting at. If a person takes his Dalet meaning and thinks to himself, my God, you know, before Rosh Hashanah, before Elul, what was I? I was like, you know, $160 worth of chemicals. But now, through the avoda of Rosh Hashanah, Aseret Yemei Teshuva, Yom Kippur, I've accomplished something. I found something of value. Then I've made myself priceless. That's something to be very happy about. If you turn quickly to page 5, or whatever page it is, 5. He quoted, Rabbi Pelkowitz, quoted from Akiva Tatz. He's a very, very smart person. Happens to be a doctor and a rabbi. And he said the following. Real happiness is what you experience when you are doing what you should be doing. When you are moving clearly along your own road, your unique path, your unique destination. You experience real happiness. When you are moving along the path that led you to yourself, to deep discovery of who you really are. When you are building the essence of your own personality, creating yourself, a deep happiness wells up within you. The journey does not cause happiness. The journey is the happiness itself. Now, I got to tell you, there's so much to talk about this little paragraph. How much meaning is there? But since I only have like 3 minutes left, I want to just emphasize the following. The point he's making is something that you need to experience. It's an avodah gedola to experience it, but you need to experience it to really appreciate it. When a person takes himself and gives himself true value and gives meaning to his life that's real and honest, that is when you will only, and the only time in my view, you will experience true happiness. Not fleeting, phony happiness. The Rav Nevinsol, on the next two pages, anyone who wants to can read it at their leisure, I'm going to summarize what he says. He takes this whole thing in the same direction and he takes it a step further. He says, what we really need to do, the reason it's an avodah gedola, is because a lot of us don't think we have much value. A lot of us don't realize that we've accomplished things and we don't emphasize it enough. He says, you got to take this period of Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkis, you got to realize that the focus is not Yom Kippur, in a way. Yom Kippur is not the peak. The peak is the joy of Sukkis. Hitting that, being able to feel happy, which meant that during the first half of that period, what we were doing were self-assessing, finding out who you really are. What am I? And I don't mean anything personal about this, because I know I'm talking to 90% of the yeshiva or more. Who am I? Just a guy that during the service of Mitchuba will stay up late worrying about fantasy football and worrying about, you know, things like that. Is that really the sum total of who I am? Could be. Right? Is that who I really want to be? Is that all there is to me? Or can I accomplish something much more meaningful and much greater than that? So you have to, the hard part is, first of all, admitting the truth. Finding what you're about and being honest with yourself and then seeing how important and how valuable it really is. And then you spend the rest of the time maybe coming to the conclusion you could do better. And how you could do better. And trying to do better. And that's what you should do all the way up to Yom Kippur. And resolve to do better. But then he says, that's half the avodah. The second half is even trickier, right? That seems hard to do. Admit the truth, find the truth, recognize what's really meaningful and what's not. That's half the job. The second half is very subtle and very important. He says, during Sukkis, the Ha'isa Ach Samech. What does Ach Samech means? Only happy. The avodah of the second half means you absolutely don't do anything like what I just described for the first half. You don't at all think about anything negative about yourself. What you have to do is focus only on whatever positive accomplishments you can find within yourself. So he says, for example, he gives an example of Levinsohn. He says, there are two guys that come into shul, right? One guy comes in at Ashrei, right? I don't know, when are you guys typically coming into Davening?
The second Ashrei.
The last Ashrei. Okay, so let's use that. Not him. So, should we use examples?
No.
So, one guy comes in, let's say, at Ashrei, and is like, this is like, you know, there's always a guy like this in yeshiva. He's serious about that one, right? So he feels really bad, right? So he feels, oh my God, I missed Birchas HaShachar, oh my God, I feel terrible. And then another guy comes in at Yishtabach, he goes, woo, holy cow, I made it by Yishtabach, or I made it by Kedusha. Right? Oh my God, that's unbelievable. So Rav Nevinzel says, who do you think you should be like? He says, well, during Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, be like the first guy. You want to be that way? Good. It's good, you know. Up your standards. You know, feel bad about doing things that you know are less than optimal. But the second half, during Sukkot, during times of Simchas Beis Shoeva, when you need to be feeling the joy of accomplishment, think to yourself only of the positive. Wow, I made it by Yishtabach. That's amazing. That's the way you are Mekayim, this Avodah Gedola. And you have to really feel good about it. You think about only the good things. Let's say you have morning seders 4 hours, right? So, let's say you wasted 3 and you were serious for 1. So during Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, bemoan the fact that you wasted 3. But when it comes to this part, think only about the 1. Wow, I learned seriously for 1 hour. You think you could do this? Right? You have to understand what it means. It doesn't mean fooling yourself. It means really highlighting for yourself. Find the experience of joy at accomplishing something. Because that's really the simcha of the simple space shoeva. This is the reason that the people that are most accomplished should be modeling it for everybody else. And then one last point. I just want you to see page 7. The very last page. How do you know if you're really happy or if you're phony happy? How do you know if you just like ate well and you liked it and you felt a certain satisfaction? This is a part of your brain called the hypothalamus. And then there's a pleasure center nearby, right? That some endorphins are being released, that it's a total biochemical reaction. But you think you're happy, right? How do you know that's what it is? I'm talking about you. Just looking at you because you brought up food, right? How do you know that's what's going on? Or true, meaningful, accomplishment-rooted happiness. How do you know? So there's a very fascinating, at the end of Perches, of Malachim Aleph, anyone know what happened in Perches? The Beis HaMikdash, right, very good. The Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech, and at the end it says, there was a big party going on for 2 weeks. First, the Chanukah Sabayis, and then Sukkot. And they actually ate and drank on Yom Kippur. It's very interesting to discuss. But what's fascinating for our purposes is there's a key here on how to know whether you really are feeling true happiness and whether what you did is the source of true happiness. It says, "Vayash Shlomo Beisa Yisachag, V'kol Yisrael Imo Kal Gadol, Milvo Chamas Al Nachal Mitzrayim," etc., etc. And they partied Shivas Yamin B'Shivas Yamin, right? And then it says in the last pasuk, right? "Vayom Hashmini Shilach Esa'am." After it was all over, he sends the people out. "V'Yivarchus Hamelch V'Yichlu Oleihem Smechim B'Tovei Lev." Suddenly, it points out that's when they were happy. Why weren't they happy during the whole party? They were happy after the party. What's the point? This is how you know. Let's say you're getting drunk. You're feeling happy when you're getting drunk. Anyone here ever get drunk? Is that enough? I'm talking to an experienced crowd. But if you have, you feel happy while you're getting drunk? Come on. Yes. Certainly look happy. How do you feel after? Right. Miserable. Hangover. Taking advantage. Right. That's not true happiness. How you feel after is what counts. How do you feel after the thing that you did that's the source of the happiness? That's the key. Now, get back to the week of the least suicide in the United States history. What happened, and this they researched, why after the assassination of JFK, why was that the lowest rate of suicide in the United States history? Somebody tell me. What did people do? What did that assassination make people do? Yes, exactly. The whole process we described, it's an unbelievable thing. You can check it on your own. But the way the psychologists and people that study these things explained it was it caused people to go through the process that we just described that we as Jews have an opportunity to do every year. They assessed. They questioned their values. They questioned the thing. Look, this was the, you know what decade this was. Right? This is the 60s, right? 60s is a wild time. They began to see that a lot of the wildness was empty, right? And then they focused on more meaningful things. That gave purpose and meaning and really cured depression to a large degree for a lot of the country, apparently. That's why I also thought 9/11, the same thing happened. People were like so unbelievable after 9/11. People were at their best. That's the ultimate message of the Simchas Beis Shoeva, that we should all be zochet to do this. Whatever you do, you know, coming up to Yom Kippur, you should still be like thinking about yourself. Get to know yourself. Come to terms with yourself. Resolve for what you can do better. But when it comes time for Sukkos, turn all the negativity off, no matter what. It's your avoda to do this. You have to only think of the positive. Whatever positives you can find, focus on them. Realize you're doing a mitzvah if you do this. If you're mekayim this, you're doing a mitzvah, and I guarantee you that you'll come out happy. I remember I had, until he throws me out, I just want to tell you a story. I had a patient once that really illustrated this for me. He was this, I spoke about it a little with some of the guys, I don't remember who was there or not. This guy was dying. He had about 48 hours left to live. He needed a heart transplant. To make a long story short, he was the most depressed person I've ever seen in my life. He was convinced his life was over. He's never going to have anything. I tried to cheer him up. Very, very impossible thing to do. Because he knew he was going to die. I'm never going to do anything. I'm never going to be happy. I'm just miserable. He was misery personified. So I said to him, but no, we're going to get a transplant. So finally, long story, but we ended up having him listed for transplant. Transplant is not an easy life. Once you're transplanted, there are lots of things you got to do. You got to go for biopsies. You have to do all these difficult things. So he knew this, and he was told this because the doctors had to get consent. It's a whole long story. But he says, "Okay, I'm not happy." I said, "Because I go to him, I go, you happy now? You're going to be saved. We're going to give you a new heart." He says, "No, but I'm going to be miserable. It's going to be horrible. It's going to be terrible." What happens? He gets transplanted. Right? And he's having a really rough course, even rougher than normal. Tons of biopsies, tons of hospitalizations, tons and tons and tons. And I'm expecting him to be morose, still very depressed. I come in to see him, and he's like smiling the biggest smile. And that smile, which is now like 25 years ago, 20 years ago, I don't remember when it was exactly, is still on his face. He's been smiling ever since. Why? Because he had anticipated, remember, like he always anticipated wrong, that life is going to be horrible and he's not going to be able to be happy. But he soon found out, incorrect, that his, now he had opportunities, despite all the difficulties in his life and all the handicaps that he had, he was accomplishing. He was accomplishing things in a way he never was able to do before his transplant. The sense of satisfaction that he had just made him a permanently happy person. And he realized that that's where true happiness can be found. We should all be zocheh to find absolute true happiness.
What?
Three F's.
Hey, gentlemen, I know this quickly grab refreshments and take them with you to the next year. We already started. Quickly grab some refreshments, take the refreshments with you to the next year. Wait, guys, let them out. That's about first. Quickly grab refreshments.
Thank you.
Do we see the Indian Muslim? Do we see the Indian Muslim climbing on top of the glass of the iron? So food would probably be in that one.
Well, that's only there's no key in the glass
of the iron. It's not how you get to actual
stuff. It's just a view, right? It's also, it's like drinking and it's a hip. But
Turning this over.
Did it record?
It didn't record.
So, no, it's on.
It's on. It's put it twice, right?
How did you pause it?
I missed this red button.
No, that's